Some years ago, the Lutheran Council USA flew me from Chicago to Little Rock, Arkansas to talk with a group of people in a regional consultation about the problem of single people in the church. That's not because I was so expert in that field, but I guess I was available, and some other people thought it was a very important topic because some folks are insulted by the fact that singles are detruded. It's a big word to lift your hat to. Detruded means to be put off a little bit by congregational life that seems to be organized on the assumption that everybody has a family. On the other hand, it's not such a big problem. One of the young men in the tape ministry was asking about what we were going to talk about tonight, and he said, I've been single all my life, and I didn't know that it bothered anybody. But we'd like to talk about singleness and what kind of problem that makes for people who are single in church life and what parishes might do about that. Joining me is John Watkins, professor from Ferris Institute in Big Rapids, Michigan, who does know something about this topic. And I think that what I'll do is to ask for a few comments to kind of juice the conversation up, and then we'll take off on singles and their place in the church and what kind of problem or opportunity this presents to parishes. What would you say, John, to start us?
I think the first thing I'd like to do is establish that what I want to do here with my comments is merely provide a trigger for other people to respond to.
That's right. The idea of these forums is an exchange of views.
And one of the things, when Don and I were first talking about this, I suggested, and he asked me if I would be here to this evening to talk about it. I mentioned that I didn't know if I was the one to be here, because I have been, for the last 13 years of my life, not a single person. And I think you sort of have to be there to know what it's like to talk about those kinds of issues. And I was feeling a little bit as if Don had asked me to talk tonight about what it's like to be a mother. The only difference is that I can sort of look back, I suppose, 13 years, and I don't know if that would be really very relevant. One of the things I have done is a reasonable amount of reading in the area of families. And when you read about families, you also read about single life, I suppose. And just to share a few things with you, right now we are in a position where we need to look, I think it would be easier for us to look at who is married or the role of the married than it is to look at the role of the single. Because when we talk about married people, we're sort of talking about a single category. But when we're talking about single people, what are we talking about? And I think my own family sort of an example of that. And I look at my extended family. Because right now, my mom is single. But she's single as a widowed woman. And right now, my brother is single. But he's single as a divorced man. Right now, several of my children are single. But they're single by their choice to be single. And then we have other kinds of configurations of singleness. How many of you are acquainted with the term puzzle cube? How many of you?
Puzzle cube?
Puzzle cues? We have tremendous number. Well, no, 3% of our households are made up of puzzle cues right now.
P-O-S-S-L-Q.
And that's the term that the government has given for people of the opposite sex sharing living quarters.
P-O-S-S-L-Q.
Right. Now some of those people sharing living quarters, people of opposite sex sharing living quarters, may be very intimately related. And they really have a relationship going. Can we call those people single? Are they single? Statistically, they are. And so I think we need to be aware of that. Several other things, too, just in terms of statistics, if I can share these with you. Right now, more than, in terms of our households, as of 1982, more than one-fifth of our households include one person living alone. One in five of our households are one person living alone. And this is up 75% since 1970. At the same time, the number of people who are 25 and single has tripled in that time. Or the
ten,
figure.
In
the,
10 years?
In 12 years.
12 years.
Right, it has tripled. And I think we're talking about percentages here rather than numbers, I hope. The number between 26 and 34 has quadrupled in that period of time. We've, at the same time, well, I think after doing the reading on and so forth, I came to sort of my own conclusion about singleness, because obviously the opposite of singleness is marriedness, and one in 10 of the people in the United States will not marry, one in 10. But that means 9 out of 10 will. But if you take a look at divorces and so forth, I'm wondering if singleness is not simply another way of saying, here is an individual who is in a transitional condition. They're perhaps going to marry, or they're between spouses, or at least their life is in transition, if we're looking at 9 out of 10 who are married. And I think maybe at this point, if we keep one other factor in mind, and that is that being single does not necessarily mean being alone. That we do have people sharing households. And I think maybe at that point I'd like to stop, because there are a number of singles here, perhaps in any one of those different categories. I'd like to hear from them.
On your stats, John, when you said 1 out of 5, did you mean just a single person or a single household?
No, these are single, no, this is one person per household in those. Okay, 1 in 5. Right now, in terms of number of single people right now, we are at 1 in 4. But there's a difference there, because we have the puzzle cues who are living together, you see. And so that makes a difference between single people versus single people in one household.
You know the stats on single families. In other words, if there's one person, like a mother or a father, you know, in the family,
In terms of single parent families, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, single parent families right now, since 1970, have gone from 21.7 million to 35 million. In other words, they're up 61% in 12 years. Now, single parent families.
When you cite these statistics, what are you reading from? 1980 census?
This was the report as of 1982. I guess it would be the 80 census. I'm not sure. If you want more information on it, my source was the January 17th issue of Newsweek, which was a 83, January 17th of 83, and they had a special report on America, profile of America right now. Yeah.
Or asking the question what singleness is and what it means in church life, both to people who are singles and what it means to the ministry and the community in which these people live. That's another community in which
right.
people live. Single but not separate.
What do you mean by it's another community? What do you mean by it's another community in which people live?
John is saying people sharing living quarters are not necessarily are single, but not necessarily married, and counted in a different way.
Okay.
There are other communities that we belong to, one of which would be a parish church, I expect, and communities of work too.
You can see my comments have generated a lot of discussion.
Well, how does singleness feel to those of you who are single? I mentioned at the beginning a comment from one of the young men in the tape ministry who said he'd been single all his life and it didn't seem to bother him.
I would be curious to know from people who are married of how they view those who are single. Is there feelings of jealousy at times? Or envy? I guess I, as a single person, am always curious of how other people view us who are single and those who are active, say, in the church.
And those who have?
Who are active in the church when it comes to, you know, events that you're doing, family activities in the church.
When we've had events in my church, it's, you know, family type things. Everyone has been welcomed, and we just say everyone, you know, we ask everybody to come, and we don't make an issue of couples or families. I mean, we, or, you know, like spouses, husbands and wives and children. It's just everybody.
One of the problems, though, is that, as I've heard it from singles who seem to resent this, is that the implication is there that it's always families. We're quite open in saying, y'all come, but sometimes the message is given that it's really for families, unconsciously. And that's one of the things that irritates folks.
Okay, and unintentionally also, there's family night potlucks and things such as that, and you go to a potluck and sit down and you're maybe one or two single people, and you're there and your families are obviously involved with their children and their spouses, and the feeling is rather odd. Very unintentionally.
Get the unintentionality of a family night potluck.
Yeah, and it wasn't
just what it's called.
It was intended as a church family potluck. I've been to many of these alone, and they can be very fun. None of it's intended. It's just the feeling that one gets when you sit there at a table with groups of families and you're single.
Did it make you feel lonely? Is that a part of it? Or when you say it makes one feel odd, can you explain
the
same?
Odd. You don't have children to feed, for starters.
That may be a relief.
Very busy and very involved in feeding their children and getting food and all the activities that happen in families at mealtime. And conversation is really limited. So you sit there kind of wondering what to do. Do you borrow a child for the dinner hour?
No, I think what happens sometimes on is we say something is family night, meaning it's okay to bring the children, and inadvertently it sounds like it's only for those groups. And really, you're trying to include more people by saying it's okay to bring your kids, and you make people who are sinless feel left out. And it's, I think we're just becoming sensitive to how that, I know in our church there, we're just, listen to what it sounds like. And it's not intentionally, but it has, but that's the outcomes that make singles feel unwanted or odd.
Well, that's a social kind of thing that you've been remarking about. Does anybody who's single ever hear that implication in preaching, in the way the message is addressed? And how does that, we'll get around to this question you asked after that.
I think many of the stories that are used in preaching, or, you know, the pastor, he or she oftentimes is married and is relating to personal experiences, and this is not a criticism of the pastor because I value those personal experiences relating that to the gospel or to the text, but a lot of those examples are living in the family. You know, my husband or my wife or my child did this or this thing. And sometimes I feel, how do I make the connections in my own personal life that I do not have a family, an immediate family?
I've not been a single person for 26 years, but I've had opportunity to have a couple of single women relate to me and feelings they had about the church. About 2 years ago, I received a letter from a young widow with two small children. Her husband had been diagnosed as having Hodgkin's disease, and within a few months he died. And she went on to tell about having been active in the church as a family, and now was feeling like she was an outsider looking in, not feeling a part of that church. And I haven't read that letter for a while. I saved it because I know I'll be able to use it sometime. But all kinds of questions. You know, what's the church saying to these group of people? Very frustrated. It was a 7-page letter. And then I heard another young woman last fall expressing having been out of the country doing some kind of work for a while and coming back and trying to fit into the church and not feeling a part of it because so many things were coupled, right? So I think, you know, there's some frustration.
I have sort of a question. I'm wondering how many of you belong to churches where there are single groups, you know, where the singles do something on Friday night or Saturday night or whatever, just as they have family night. How about singles night? How many of you belong?
I belong to the group or
how many of you belong to a church that has a singles group? That's really it. I think the reason I have asked that is I'm wondering to what extent that becomes an artificial distinction. The one thing that this group of people has in common is that they are not married. They may not have anything else in common. Now, their age range is very different, their interests are very different, but they do have the fact that they are single. And I'm just wondering if that has shown up in those single groups, or am I off base with that?
Usually those single groups in the congregation are made up of young single people, and say from 25 to 40.
That answer the question up here about is it, does that become a kind of community in a congregation? You were saying that it's not necessarily a community. You can have a
right.
singles group, but there's the fact that one is single is much of a basis for community. There may be some other kinds of interests that would say something to that.
There are a lot of small towns and small congregations, too, that wouldn't have the numbers. Now, that might only have one, two, or three singles that would fit into a young singles group category. I find that true in the small town in Iowa where I am. And what we've done is we've sort of created an ecumenical singles group. We cut, you know, feeding on several singles from different churches simply because the numbers weren't there.
I think what I was getting at here, I'm wondering if the several singles in your church were included in simply a church activity, if you would find more commonality with marrieds in that same activity than you would with simply other people who coincidentally happen to be single. Would that fit?
I think so. Because, you know, ages might be closer, your interests might be closer.
It's kind of difficult sometimes to form relationships with married people, though, because they want to be friends with other married people so they can do things as a foursome. Now, I have that problem a lot in my church. I know a few married people, but most of the people I know are single. I don't like that being the only thing we have in common. And I'm really against singles groups in the church. It's just not inclusive.
I find kind of the opposite situation as a married person, wanting relationships with single people who are reluctant to be a part of a relationship because they feel they need to have someone else along. You know, I appreciate
it. I'm sorry, but is there a mommy here in Lodge 3 with a little kid hanging out the window crying?
Mommy.
I don't know.
Anybody from Lodge 3?
What's the kid look like?
I don't know, he's in the window, but he should be, Mom, he's crying. I don't know where else to look.
The bowling alley.
Bowling alley.
Okay, there was a comment over. Were you finished over here with your comment?
Well, I was just saying that I think married people will often welcome relationships with singles, but at least in my experience, singles often feel awkward or uncomfortable and feel like they're tagging along or something like that, and are more reluctant to enter into that relationship than maybe some of us, you know, from the married side are more willing.
We have a comment here and here and then here. Please.
My church in Bradenton, Florida had a group that was comprised of anybody that wanted to come, just above teenage, but adults. We had divorced people, we had widowed people, as well as couples, so it was not specifically for any type of companionship. You could bring a date or whatever. And it worked out very well. We had monthly activities. We'd have something different each time, so it would appeal to anybody in the congregation that wanted to come. And it's worked out very well. It's still going on.
Okay, there's a back here, yes.
Yeah. I've been a single person all of my life, and I found that if a single person chooses to not have married friends as friends, that seems to be their choice. I have lots of married friends. In fact, some of my best friends are married. However, I also have many single friends, and I don't see any problem with going to group activities or family activities. I belong to a church that has many single parents or single families, single members that come to church, so we don't have a big couple kind of congregation. But I teach at a congregation that is very family-oriented, and if I am going to a potluck dinner or something where most of the people have families, if I want to be a closed person and feel out of it because I don't have a little kid to feed, I can feel that way, but I choose not to. And I think single people can look at it as choosing not to feel out of it.
You're saying it's a matter of attitude.
It's a matter of attitude.
But it's true that you're in San Francisco and these fellows are from Western Iowa. Maybe a difference in the kind of community. I promise, Nancy, well, Shotten and Elmer.
I just wanted to say, our congregation has tried to have what we call community life groups. And it's a geographical grouping. I'm sure a lot of churches have tried to have a geographical grouping of whoever lives there in a certain area and have four times a year got a get together of some kind. And our trouble has always been getting those people who are single to come. And I think what Audrey's saying, asking about how do married people feel about single people, was what you were asking, has to relate to that problem. It's not a family-oriented thing usually that we have. It's a geographical, everybody on the list is called, everybody come, let's do something. And I've wondered if the single people are uncomfortable with married people, is somebody out there? I think that's the whole problem, is how do we feel about each other and why are we apparently uncomfortable?
Okay. I don't want to preempt Elmer back here, but I want to get sort of an extension. I'm wondering, in your community, or these community areas, how many of these people who are married are of an age range significantly above the youth or the married people. I'm wondering if that is more the differing condition rather than whether they're married or single.
You can say yes or no, I don't know, or I don't think so, Nancy.
You want a quick answer? I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. Sir.
Elmer.
Well, as a newly single, having been married, all I can say is the pits. But that's from the point of view of someone who has been married. I'd like to say, my wife and I did have a good number of friends who were both single as well as married, and I don't recall us ever expressing or even sensing, certainly I have never sensed, any jealousy of the single state. Not to say that it wasn't a good state, but it just wasn't for us, so that never seemed to be there. But what I sense, and now I don't speak for a congregation, but maybe for myself, is that one of the distancing factors between singles and the church is the church's fear of what singles are doing with their sexuality. and the church being so uneasy about talking about intercourse or talking about what happens with sexuality outside of marriage has edge on it, and I think therefore people don't get very honest with one another, and some of the fears with married and unmarried is a single woman around with married men and back and forth, as some of our married, our single ordained women have. Of course, they report that too. So, I mean, there's a little still plenty of uncomfortableness with sexuality and what one does with being a sexual being, and I think that's still hard.
I wonder if something else that happens isn't that people feel, if we're going to be honest, is that I remember being single and wishing I were not, being very happy to be married to a nice person, and I'm always wondering, am I going to make that single person feel badly that they are not in a similar state as I am?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is that what is communicated very often from various people is, is the feeling that they feel sorry for us because we're not married, or we don't have someone. And because either that they themselves were once single, or that's their primary identity. I think what happens many times with people, when I had a suburban parish, what happened is that when married people were in the congregation and they were divorced, and what happened in almost every case was that both people ended up, not coming anymore because their identity was as a couple. And that was their identity in that congregation. Unless one person could be painted as the real bad person, and the other one would get a lot of sympathy for that. The other thing is that I've seen is that when women are, women particularly, well, it's not, I should say this women, but maybe because it happened, I've seen it more often that way. But when they are dumped by their husband, at least from their own perception, it's like a triple whammy. They've been fired as a wife. They've not only lost their companion, but they've also been fired from their job. And they have to go out and work, and earn a living. And so it's a double kind of thing. So they lose their identity as a couple. And then they also lose their vocation. And that's very, very upsetting. And so they become extremely sensitive to any kind of family kinds of orientation in the congregation. And they immediately think that, that they're being cut out and left out. And what it is that they have been, cut out.
Yeah, so they're
so
special.
Painful for them to go so painful. Into that situation.
So there are special problems with that kind of single. We had a hand over here.
What Elmer brought up, I think, is the issue for me, what I'm interested in. As a future pastor, I've worked in a couple of different congregations, a couple in the Midwest and a couple out on the East Coast, and it's been interesting to observe the differences that the congregation supports, the different perceptions they have of what acceptable sexuality is, and how that influences how the community is able to reach out to people who don't fit into either inside the pale of the accepted expression of sexuality. I'd like to ask I don't know if we can answer this, but I'd like to ask what the Lutheran churches are doing, both in what I call the very traditional congregations in maybe rural Midwestern, and that's just a stereotype, or the urban settings of the East Coast, and I think you can find those in different places too. But what are those different kinds of congregations? What are our experiences in different kinds of congregations with congregations both, as a certain kinds of sexual expression, and marriage is one of them. What is this? People, single people.
The puzzle cube.
The puzzle cues, and all of the homosexuals, and on and on. I won't try to name all the different categories. how do we go about in a congregation, how have we seen our congregations going about in preaching, in social activities, in our worship forms, in the power structure of the churches, in, you know, what else is there that makes up a congregation that we've observed that supports either an openness or a closeness to different kinds of sexual expression? And what does that say about what the church, you know, are we many parts? Are we many people trying to unify, or are we certain kinds of people trying to solidify ourselves against the world that may be different? Try to tie in a little bit of the theme of this summer.
Question is, what have we observed? Now, you want to know East Coast and Midwest, but why don't we just leave it at what attitudes do we perceive in church?
Right, and my experience is just limited to those two locations, and I've seen drastic differences.
Now, you didn't say anything about what differences you saw that would give us a handle, but we could respond, I suppose, from congregational experience about inclusiveness and acceptability of sexual patterns.
Yeah.
What do you think? What, here?
Well, I think if we look back even further into history, it's been a long-standing belief of the church is to go forth and multiply. And that's the only way that the church is able to continue to bring in more members. So that in a marriage ceremony, they always include, and may you be fruitful. And the church really hasn't fostered singleness at all. And I think, you know, it's a basic concept that has its roots many, many years ago.
You want to make that a generalization for all church life, regardless of territory in the United States?
Yeah.
We've always blessed marriage. We've always been for that as an ideal state. Okay, that's one statement. Who else?
It's interesting that Schrantz, who were the directors here, are now working on orders for Lutheran Church, which is the sanctification of singleness in a church, which hasn't been an option in Lutheran churches since Martin Luther decided to get married and walk from the Summa Cum.
Okay, that's an evidence of blessing singleness.
A certain kind of singleness.
And, well, I think that the diaconate does the same kind of thing. Although it doesn't bless singleness as a lifetime career, but it blesses singleness and the worthiness of that kind of church vocation.
Not being a pastor, I'm not going to be overly precise here, but as I recall, Paul had much to say about being single and its merits in terms of the church. And it might be interesting to see how many, you know, if there could not be some support for that kind of position.
I think Paul's viewpoint of singleness is what I think at his time he thought the kingdom of God was at hand. That, hey, tomorrow, you know, almost we're going to have the second coming.
Right.
And so don't mess around. Why get married? Why have children?
Right. Why run for mayor? Why
good
do
point.
Anything?
Yeah. Good point.
Back here, you got a comment.
Right. Well, kind of following what he's saying, I think Paul, too, realized that singleness, in the perspective he was talking about, was a total dedication to God's work, though. It was not a singleness for, you know, let me do what my own thing and, you know, whatever makes me happy. It was a total service to others. And also something else I would like to say, I have never heard come out of a Lutheran pulpit, and this has really bothered me, any kind of a statement on divorce. There has not been a strong stand. And Scripture is so strong on that divorce, you know, and if we have to, as a congregation, go to a friend that we know in our congregation who is having problems with the marriage and do all that we can to buoy up that marriage and talk to the husband, talk to the wife, or whatever. But I have never heard a statement, you know, that it is sin and that that's the absolute last option that should ever be. So, I just wonder about that.
Yes.
It's interesting that a professor at school has observed that it's just been in the last half century, 50 years, that the churches have come around to accept divorce, not only among their members, but among their clergy as well. There has, he said, and you should know, no theological debate about why that's done or why that's not done. His position was that we ought to theologically debate it and move very quickly to eliminating divorced clergy. I'm not so sure that I agree with him. I'm not so sure, you know, to point the issue that I would want to say from the pulpit that divorce is sin. I think I have.
Christ said it. I mean, any sin is pardonable by the Lord. I mean, you know, it's true. We may goof up our life and make such a mess in our home. And I guess I can kind of speak from experience because I almost walked out on my husband. I did not know that divorce was a sin. I had not heard it preached from the pulpit, and I had my bags packed. And thank God the Lord had a hand on him, and he went and got help for us. And we've been married 21 years, but who said marriage was easy? It's so difficult, and it's high plateaus and it's low valleys, and you work at it hard. And I think that even secular society is finding out the tremendous damage that divorce does to children. There was a tremendous article in the Seattle Times that said, you know, basically, think about it carefully. You go to all help that you can before you make that final decision. And so I've seen the church hide its head and not speak to that issue and not talk out of the pulpit about it. They don't have any kind of classes or so on, and that bothers me terribly.
No, I'll respond to that. I think that on the first hand, you know, just as a rule of thumb, and I'm obviously speaking from experience, so I can say this fast. You support a marriage as far as it will go. And sometimes you push the people that are in the marriage beyond what they want to as a community, as a church community, the congregation that surrounds them. Then you take responsibility for what happens to those two people. I guess I've said something like that from the pulpit every once in a while. But I've also said, sometimes not from the pulpit, out east I've said it more clearly, that divorced people are can't be labeled as some kind of a special sinner. You approach the divorced person, or you approach married people who are raising hell and not a marriage between the two of them, and that they're destroying both themselves and the kids. And you approach them and you say, what you're doing now is worse than divorce. And so what you don't do on this thing, and what you don't try to do from a pulpit is say that divorce is a sin, because you have different kinds of people in the congregation at different points of stress and strain. But it's interesting how that works out in different communities. Specifics, kind of from the question I was asking that I've observed. Out east, I could say that I could say very clearly from a pulpit, and it could be heard and accepted, that divorced people are not sinners. If I was to say that in a pulpit in the Midwest, and I wanted to have that have the same effect, what I would say was that divorced people are no more sinners than anybody else. And I would emphasize then, in a sentence very close to that, the blessedness of marriage. Just because the congregation as a community emphasizes marriage much more, at least where I was in the West, than the congregations did in the East. And when a majority of the congregation is divorced, you don't tell them that they're sinners. And because of that issue.
I have a problem with some kinds of sermons that don't recognize what pastoral problems are. The congregation where I worship has probably, I would expect, one-third of those people sitting there and taking communion with their children and all are divorced people. A pastor's got to be very careful, and he speaks about divorce pretty often. He talks about family life a lot, too, and I keep wondering whether that isn't kind of chilly news for all those single parents who are sitting there. But I think that he does a very good job, because I think that he doesn't duck what you're talking about, but I think he handles it as a pastoral problem. And he's not going to club anybody with the issue of divorce. Because he's got so many people that he's got to minister to.
But what with my husband here, I didn't know. I had not heard from Nicole, but I thought that was such an antiquated idea. Perhaps I would have tried and sought help, for us. And yet I didn't do that. And that's what worries me, is if people don't hear a statement made in, backing up what Christ said, then how can they say, well, that just isn't an option to me, so I can go get help. Instead, we hide our heads in the sand.
Yeah, well, what's the comment? There's some several comments. One here, right here. Yeah, please.
Well, it seems to me that your case must be an extremely exceptional one for a church member to not somehow know that divorce is a sin or that the church really frowns on that. I find that really incredible. I think that not only the church, but the society itself, and as much as we talk about how easy divorce is, I challenge you to ask anyone who's ever been divorced whether or not that was easy. I agree that divorce is a sin. I happen to be divorced. I'm not sure, really, though, that it's the divorce that's a sin. The breakdown of the marriage is a sin. There's no way around that. But I think in churches across the land, and even still in our culture, that the idea that divorce is bad is really plenty prominent enough.
Okay, what's your, please?
Just to go a step further with what you said, sometimes I think that the marriage itself is a sin, and divorce is a blessing. Yeah, lots of times in marriage, I'm sure, then, you were deceiving yourself or maybe the other person.
Elmer.
I really like to get back to singles, but I'd like to suggest we do a session on divorce and see whether Jesus really did say what you say he said. Just to say that flatly is not acceptable for a lot of people that don't believe that's really what our Lord was saying. What I don't hear in Lutheran churches, if you want to say what I don't hear people talking about gossip. Mm-hmm. I don't hear people talking about the poor. Our Lord only spoke about a few times, but 4 or 5 about divorce. And spoke almost constantly about helping the poor. That I don't hear in Lutheran pulpits. And so I think we want to get some balance on what we hear and what we don't hear. But I do think our uptightness about, again, we're back to divorce and all of that interrelationship is part of the problem. If we're not clear about that, speaking to one another, then I think it's pretty comfortable, pretty easy for a single person who is finding a way in that midst to be very confused about what the church's message is. That's my opinion.
And I think that
creates.
Yeah, I agree. I think this discussion is a good indication of some of the friction that may be there between singles and married. If we're not sure what we think about some of these things, then we're going to be uncomfortable with each other. But getting back to the topic and away from this one, which is an interesting rabbit trail, but something else I mean. My experience as a married person with singles, and maybe this responds to your question a little bit, I think we have to differentiate between acquaintances and friends. And we talk about friends as singles or married, but a lot of the people that I relate with are acquaintances. They're not good, true, close friends in that sense. And the acquaintances that I relate with, I'm always more comfortable relating with married people because we have some things in common, whether it's kids, communication, the relationship, that kind of thing. And yet I find that when I get past that into a deep friendship with a single person, so we're through all the little surfacey stuff that's so convenient, then I can have a good deep relationship with them. But it's a catch-22. How do you get through that to get to the deep relationship if you don't have these little things in common? And that's what I find.
Mm-hmm. Commonality. Your comment and your comment.
Getting back to the singles, concept again, the thing that really irritates me is in my own professional life, people ask me, and I don't bring the subject up, well, you're married, aren't you? Aren't you? Well, no. And I just leave it at that, and some are smart enough not to carry it any further, and others are kind of curious, well, what's the matter with you? You know, and they don't put it quite that way, but, well, how come? You know, did your wife die? Are you gay? You know, what's wrong with you? And that there's something wrong with you if you're not married.
What's your profession that makes that so serious?
Well, it's not serious. I'm a dentist. And I talk to people, and they, you know, just, well, aren't you married?
Dentists are supposed to be married.
Well,
isn't everybody?
Sure, you know, and not only that, and not even to get to the point of marriage, but I have a retarded brother, and when we were kids, people aren't always very kind. You know, they often approach my mother and says, "Well, what's wrong with him? Well, what's wrong with you for asking?" You know, and it really irritates them for people, you know, to become inquisitive. As, and it gets back to Elmer's about they don't feel comfortable, you know, about the sexuality part. You know, are you divorced? Are you gay?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I think it'd be really embarrassing, you know, for them to say, "Well, geez, no, my wife died," and then they get all defensive and, "Geez, I'm sorry I asked." But sometimes I really don't think people are very tactful, and I sometimes feel that they're being judgmental. And like what Jim said, when there's a married couple that become divorced in a church, you go separate ways. And reflects back to what your comment was, that, you know, divorce is a sin. And that's unacceptable, and so people don't feel comfortable with that, they go elsewhere. The other comment was that divorce is really wrong, for the worst thing that could happen for children. I don't agree with that. Because sometimes I believe that the worst thing that can happen for those kids is to stay married.
Okay.
Can I ask you?
Okay, just one, let's get this one, and then there's a question over here. Who is asking the question?
Can I just ask the speaker a question?
All right.
From what kind of a congregation are you? I mean, how would you typify a community?
This relates to the question about regional attitude.
Midwest.
Rural. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, your comment now, and then we'll go over here.
Yeah, I've been married and I've been single. I'm single now. I've served a parish in a suburb which was very, very family oriented. Now I serve a parish that we're just about everybody single. I think we have about two couples or so on a whole church with kids. And during the years when I was a church executive and I traveled from church to church, you see that many of the churches that are centered in the metropolitan area, the old downtown churches, are very often made up primarily of single people, and the churches in the suburbs are made up primarily of families. And I think that it has to do with economics and demography and things like this. What is happening now, and why the churches have become aware of it, is that what is happening in the suburbs, they're building multiple dwelling units, they're having all single family homes. And you're finding single people living also in the suburbs of our major cities. And then you have the added thing where you have people breaking up. So it's all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, but gradually, when churches now are doing demographic studies of their own membership, these pyramids, they are, to their surprise, finding a rather large group of single people within their own churches, and these, especially in our large suburban churches. And it's a real dilemma, because the pastors, for the most part, are very family-oriented people, and even if their children are grown, why, they still have got, you know, this a very familial kind of thing, and they're up there pretty much as an example of that. So single people, in wanting to go and talking to their pastor about their particular needs, about their particular problems, do not feel an identity. I mean, I'm talking about the mature adult, the adult, talking to your pastor about it. because they feel that the pastor cannot identify with their situation because they're single. So there is that alienation. And I think that we have to use some imagination when it comes to parish ministry in developing programmatic things for singles and stuff like this, and having ministers in that working in that area, just like we do for elderly people. I mean, we don't make any apologies at all about having a visitation pastor in the church who's retired for all of the elderly people. And because all the elderly people are old doesn't mean that they're feeble, or that they are not don't have their concept, you know, their thoughts about them, or that they are not sexual. And that elderly people, because a person's 70 or 75 years old, that they don't want to get together with a man or with a woman now and then and do things and stuff like that.
You're talking about sensitivity in the whole climate of the congregation, and a certain kind of acceptance, and the fact that the church has always blessed the married state and holds that up as an ideal says something about the acceptability of the ministry of the present clergy roster. There's a comment over here, two comments over here, first yours and then yours, and then Elmer, and then we have to be respectful of Conklin, and we have about 5 minutes. Please.
Sometimes I think our approach is wrong on the issue itself.
On the issue of?
Singles in relationship to the church and inclusiveness and that kind of thing. I think of the times when I've seen singles and marrieds and others, you know, be able to work together and form a sense of community. It hasn't been when they're trying to do that in and of itself. It's been more when there's been a clear sense of purpose on the part of the church or the organization, where there's been a sense of mission. I think about the times when, for example, in my community recently, there was a hunger walk, you know, they had folks needing to get together to plan for that kind of thing and carry it off. Hundreds of people were involved, and it wasn't really an issue whether you were single or married or black or white or disabled or young or old. Everybody seemed to share the same vision and the same purpose, and that wasn't really a factor, and everybody worked together well, and there was formed a real sense of community.
And you're saying something like that makes more sense than just trying to isolate the attitudes of a congregation towards singles or vice versa.
I guess I wanted to get back to her question about how married people view singles. And I can only speak, you know, from our experience and from the time that we middle-aged people came from, when the only options that, they weren't the only options, but it was expected that we would, you know, go to school and a girl would graduate from high school, maybe she would work a couple of years, maybe if she was lucky she could go to college, but it was just expected that you would get married. And so maybe we're back to what we were talking about a few years ago, and that's the generation gap, where we didn't have the choices, even career choices. And I guess I'm feeling about single people now, I'm glad you have those choices. I don't know that if I had the choice, that I would have chosen to stay single. But I'm happy for my daughter. I'm happy for my daughter that she has the choice to have a career, or that if she chooses to stay single, that she can do that.
We haven't talked about that apostle queue. You mentioned apostle queue. We haven't talked about that.
Say, for example, if people were living together, and they came to Holden Village, they may live together, but they couldn't live together here.
Oh. Unless Elmer checks them out. Who knows? There may be no way of knowing.
You don't check.
Well, friends.
Can I make one statement?
Yes, please.
I don't know how many people I spoke with pastors about
because I guess you get in a group, you know, you can't tell the difference.
I thought they all looked alike.
Oh.
No, they don't.
You
want to
single them out?
No, no, I don't want to single them out at all. I am a pastor, and I just want to say I'm retired. And my mode of ministry was, on top of the list, was personal ministry to every human being in the church. And in 40-some years, I never did know what to do with singles. You see, because, I mean, I could ask them, what would you like, and so on. And the thing was this, there wasn't much response. You see, if you go ahead and try to make a program, some of them, or many of them possibly had the idea, well, tell you now, they're trying to make something because they felt sorry for me. And I frankly didn't know what to do, and I didn't know any other pastor, you know, in the area that didn't know. And there's only one church in the whole area that does something about singles, but it's more, not so much just in the congregation, but rather citywide. See what I mean? Inviting, you know, not just depending on their church, but having a program which reaches out to a lot of other people. But my point is, if there's any point to it, is this, that I feel, and I hope I don't indict my fellow clergymen, I was just ignorant and still am ignorant on it, and I've served in ministry 43 years. And I don't think I've been dumb.
See, I'd like to relate to that one, because of an awful lot of my history before I got to be a church bureaucrat was with single people, mostly single people. The toughest job I had was trying to relate to married people. And that was because I was working in a university community, and the married people were supposed to go to church, you know, the parish churches. And I had all sorts of problems in just getting hold of them because both parents were working. And I call on them at supper time, you know, married people. But I was really ministering mostly to singles. And the way in which that was done is to try to call attention to what I think you were saying, some commonality of purpose, which has nothing to do necessarily with the singleness. Right. You call people together on the basis of scholarship or some other kind of thing, and maybe that's a better answer than trying to deal with folks on a chronological age basis.
But generally, the parish is family-oriented.
Generally, the parish is, and that's a problem that we've surely uncovered tonight, and it looks like it's going to be with us.
And even to find out what to do, you know, I mean, from the people themselves, absolutely unsuccessful.
Could I just say one little thing?
Where are you?
I promise you that.
In
response to something
you
said.
Oh, sure.
You said that you minister to people as individuals. I think one thing that married people, quote unquote, tend to lose track of is that, in a way, we're all single people. We are all individuals. Because you're married, it doesn't mean that you have lost your individuality. At least I hope people don't feel that they have. They still have their own hopes and dreams, their own personalities, their own goals, their own, to some extent, their own work, their own roles. And I mean, in finding things to talk about, we all have different interests, and I think single people and married people can relate because we are all individuals. And I think too often, and what I'm hearing just in the last half hour, is that married people and single people can't communicate because we're two different groups. We're all people, and some of us have chosen to relate with another human being in a very close way, and others of us have not either found a person that we want to enter into a relationship with, or we just are not choosing that way at this point.
Okay, thank you. We do have to call time, friends. It's now 5 minutes, according to my watch, before Compline. Compline is going to be in this room. Not all of you want to stay, and those of you who do want to stay want to compose yourself a little bit for Compline. Thank you all for being here. I want to thank John for coming and giving assistance.